Greetings, friends. In the previous talk in this series, we explored the inner well as an image of God's dwelling place within us, and how this well tends to get blocked by layers of grit and stones. And so part of our inner journey involves becoming aware of these layers and learning to let go as a way of clearing the rubble so that the living water can flow freely from within us, from God, our source. We are not the source of the living water, we cannot make it flow, but our part is the recognition, the letting go, and laying ourselves bare to God, the source, the fountain of all life. Now, in this next talk, I want to explore in a bit more depth the hidden inner work that is involved in this inner journey. And this talk is from one of the chapters in my book, so my apologies if it's a bit repetitive for some of you. But I hope that it does bring something fresh for you today, even if you are familiar with the talk. So I'm going to shift our image slightly from the inner well and look at the inner room that Jesus described in one of his teachings about prayer from Matthew 6, verse 5. And 6, and I'll read these verses. And when you pray, Jesus said, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you pray, go into your inner room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. Now, James Allison, a wonderful teacher and theologian, says that we like to think of ourselves as independent, free thinkers, especially in the West. And I've been amazed at how people have been running around defending our so-called freedoms and liberties because we imagine that we're so free. Personal freedom is one of the values that we strongly defend. But he goes on to say that we don't recognize the extent to which we are social beings, shaped by the people around us, the subculture we grow up in, the value system that formed us, the religion in which we grew up in. And marketing depends on this. It's remarkably effective at making us want what we never knew we wanted. Because we're being shaped all the time by the culture and the people around us. This is called mimetic theory, which in a nutshell says that we desire what others desire. We are basically copying each other's desires. And at the same time, we have an incredibly strong need for approval. And so a lot of our behavior is shaped by the approval of others, or what we imagine to be their approval or disapproval. A lot of it actually goes on here. But that's, we are socially connected in that sense, in the sense of being really caught into one another's perceptions of ourselves. And as a result, we are far from free. And just watch your thoughts for a while and you'll notice how much of your behavior is tailored to creating a good impression. And our lives can feel like a constant battle with the currents in this turbulent sea of the approval or disapproval of others. We're totally driven by the positive or negative regard of the people around us. And this doesn't just apply to those of us who are pushovers, who like to be liked and so become a bit too agreeable. Because fighting against what other people think is also a way of being trapped. And either way, our responses are conditioned. We either behave so as to win the approval of others, or we react against what society would approve of. And neither of these is a free response that just emerges from the deepest truth of our being. James Allison describes this as the turbulent sea of other people's regard for us. The turbulent sea of other people's regard for us. And what it does is turn us into puppets that dance around to strange tunes. instead of being able to operate freely from our authentic inner selves. In this Matthew 6 passage that we're looking at, Jesus says, "And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogue and on the street corners to be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full." And what this verse is telling us is that when we do our praying or any other outward display of goodness or worthiness or spirituality in public, in other words, for the high regard of others, we receive the reward that we're looking for, their approval. The problem with this is that it is fickle. It doesn't last. So instead of building our sense of self, it actually erodes us if we lap it up hungrily, if we over-identify with this and believe that this is our identity, that we are worthy of this praise that we're getting. Because we get trapped into patterns of behavior to try to keep our approval ratings up. We become addicted to the reward system. And social media is feeding into this in a horrific way. Oh, the number of likes I get. And we're becoming addicted to all of these feedback systems. And one can see this in people who have a huge amount of social success, because they actually become hollowed out by it. The reward is superficial and short-lived, creating anxiety and insecurity. We want to grasp and cling onto that reward system. But it builds the outer persona, not the inner core identity. And the consequences of this are devastating when we receive blame instead of the praise that we're craving. Life starts to feel like we're at the end of a cruel whip, craving the highs and terrified of the lows. And I recently heard a very helpful piece of advice from the 11th century Buddhist teacher Atisha, who said, "Words of praise and fame serve only to beguile us. Therefore, blow them away as you would blow your nose." I really love this. Words of praise and fame serve only to beguile us. Therefore, blow them away as you would blow your nose. How much of our lives we spend seeking praise and acknowledgement, often very unconsciously. But when we start to notice the little narrator and how she or he keeps spinning things, it's quite an eye-opener what's really going on in there and what is really motivating our good deeds and righteous actions. And this is such a lovely antidote when we notice this kind of posturing and the praise and fame we're secretly hoping for. Blow them away as you would blow your nose. And this doesn't mean being rude or ungracious when somebody does acknowledge our contribution in some way, but it is a reminder to not let ourselves become beguiled by this, which the ego is very ready to do. And this brings us to the alternative that Jesus is suggesting in this wisdom passage. And that is to make the choice to regularly withdraw from this game. Let go of this outer seeking of approval by shutting the door on it completely. Choosing to disidentify with these outer descriptors of who we are and move inward to where we hear the approval of God, unconditional love. Unconditional love. In verse 6 we read, "But when you pray, go into your private room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you." And here Jesus is pointing us to a much more quietly consistent source for our sense of being and belonging. To the spacious inner presence, to this loving, beloved God, the ground of our being, the source of unconditional love. So that we become more and more established in this unshakable inner identity of who we are in God. And this is work that is done in secret. It's not the kind of work we can display out there. It's hidden inner work. And it's necessarily so because it builds an inner sturdiness that will ensure that whatever happens out there, we have a quiet assurance and stability that can withstand any turbulence. And life is turbulent. I love Eckhart Tolle's thing that he says he can sum up every movie that's ever been made in three words: something goes wrong. Otherwise, it wouldn't be an interesting movie. But that is the nature of life. Something goes wrong. We cannot ensure our futures against things going wrong. That is the suchness of life. And so we need to know who we are at a deeper level, regardless of what is happening on the outside. And know that our well-being does not depend on life going right, how we want it to, or how people perceive us, or whether we receive any form of praise or acknowledgement. And as we grow in this inner sense of identity, rooted in God, in being held unconditionally, we discover a much deeper joy, freedom, and satisfaction than we ever get from outer approval. But it takes a conscious letting go of the outer, withdrawal from that game, to start becoming rooted in the inner. And it's not that we withdraw permanently from normal life, but rather that we choose to not believe or identify with the outer stories about who we are, whether they're good or bad, and take regular time out of the game to be held at this level of our being, which is simple and quietly assured, spacious, and unshakable by that outer turbulence. And another saying of Eckhart Tolle is, deriving my identity from my successes or reputation is a cheap substitute for who I really am. It's a cheap substitute. And this inner work is discovering who we really are in our being. And so the invitation is to return again and again to knowing who we really are, apart from all that outer definition, who we are held in God, who we are in our being. Now, it's interesting to look at this private room that Jesus described in verse 6. And at that time, people didn't have our construct of a private bedroom. There were no private spaces as such. Every space was communal. And so this isn't a literal private room. It's a metaphorical inner space within us. A space of withdrawal from the outer game of public reward to an inner resting. And interestingly, James Allison points out that the Greek word used here describes a pantry. This was the only room in houses of the time that could be completely closed off from the outer world, cut off from any light or any fluctuations in temperature from the outside world, so that it could remain stable, temperature-wise, cool. And this is a wonderful metaphor for this inner space that Jesus is inviting us into, the place where you shut out those outer voices, where you are freed from the anxiety and tension of this turbulent sea of other people's regard for you, into a place that is quiet and stable, where all of that turbulence is shut out and your identity and sense of well-being is stable and grounded in this quiet inner space where we are at rest in God. And this is why it is the most important place for us to revisit frequently, because it's only when we are operating from this space that we are truly free. not dancing like a puppet to the tune of others, by either trying to win their approval or reacting to their disapproval. Our core identity is rooted more and more deeply in God, and we are free to be moved from within, out of this place where we know who we are, beyond all definitions, expectations, praise, or blame. And so this pantry is in fact the piece where everything starts. Without good pantry time, as one could call it, all we're doing is getting caught up in the web or the turbulent sea of people's expectations and desires, or worse still, our imagination of what people expect of us. And when we're caught up in that sea, we actually add to the turbulence and become part of the problem, contributing to all this fluctuating craziness going on. And Henri Nouwen wrote, "Your true identity is as a child of God. This is the identity you have to accept. Once you have claimed it and settled in it, you can live in a world that gives you much praise, as joy as well as pain, because the identity that makes you free is anchored beyond all human praise and blame. The temptation is to disconnect from that deep place in you where God dwells and to let yourself be drowned in the praise and blame of the world." He goes on, "Only God can fully dwell in that deepest place in you and give you a sense of safety. There lies your true freedom." And so part of our inner journey is to build in regular times of returning to this place of freedom. Freedom from having to dance to anybody's tune. Freedom from expectations, from worrying about what anybody thinks of us. When we enter this inner room, the quiet, temperature-controlled pantry that is protected from the fluctuations and noisy demands of the outside world, we can let go of all the voices that praise and criticize us, real or imagined, and have a break from our knee-jerk reactions to these voices, which can be so oppressive and constricting. We can have space from all these identities that are linked with outward performance and relax into being ourselves, resting in God. And to draw this into our larger theme of the inner well, this is an important part of the unblocking of the well that we looked at in the last talk, as we are freed from the blockages of these outer identities and the constraints that they place on us, our inner space becomes more and more clear, open, simple, and free, allowing us to become channels of this peace, as the living water is allowed to flow through us from God, our source. Then instead of contributing to the turbulence in the outer world, will be openings for God's unconditional love and peace beyond understanding to flow into this world. So at this point, I want to talk about the how. How do we create these regular times of withdrawal into the quiet, peaceful inner room? And it's not enough to just choose to be by yourself, shutting the literal door on the outside world. Because our minds are one of the worst parts of the praise-blame system. They project all kinds of negative voices onto others and onto God, and amplify and rehash voices from outside until our minds become our worst torturers. And in one of my eight-day retreats, I had a fascinating dream, and I'm always amazed at how powerful dreams are on those retreats when one really listens to what they're saying, to what God is saying to us through them. And in this dream, I was walking around a beautiful house that had just been built, and it was all perfect with smooth chrome finishes, clean lines, everything worked perfectly. And I used the toilet in the perfect bathroom. But when I flushed it, all sorts of rotten-looking stuff began oozing out of the cistern. And as I opened up the cistern, it was a mess of sewerage and had a whole regurgitation of things from my life as well. And I panicked about this nasty mess happening in this toilet, in this otherwise perfect house. And I called the owners of the house and apologized. I said, I don't know what I did wrong, but I made a mess. And the owner very, very quickly recognized what the problem was and said, the solution is simple. The pipe with the water going in has got swapped with the outflow pipe. And we just need to swap them back again, and then it will work perfectly. And it was such a simple resolution to what it felt like a very nasty, messy situation. And what struck me most about this dream, which is very vivid, this image, is this idea that one simply needs to allow fresh water to flow into the system rather than regurgitating all the waste that should be let out, and the whole system will be cleared out and work as it should. And this sounds sort of laughably simple and obvious when thinking about a toilet, but the crazy thing is that this is what we're doing all the time with our minds. We've allowed our outlet to feed back in as the inlet, and it has led to all manner of clogged up mess and regurgitation and unhappiness. And what I've realized is that any train of thought that is self-reinforcing is the sewerage that we have fed back in, even if it seems selfless, righteous, or virtuous. Anything that reinforces our self-image in any way, whether it is about doing good or being powerful, successful, or whether it's negative or self-critical, all of this, if we keep feeding it back in, bloats us and feeds us unhealthy pollution that will rot us from inside. And this includes critical or judgmental thoughts, which we think we need to feed back into somehow keep ourselves humble and good and pure. None of that is going to clear out the system. Only letting it all flow outward is what clears the system, and letting fresh water into the system. And so our inner room is a place that is deeper and more quiet than our own minds and emotions. It's a place where we allow in the fresh water of God's love, God's presence, God's voice in the silence. And this is why we need to learn practices such as meditation, awareness, centering prayer, which give us tools for letting go of the mind's incessant jabber and feedback loops so that the system can become unclogged, clear, so that fresh water can come bubbling in. I really like how Father Thomas Keating describes centering prayer. He wrote, centering prayer is not so much the absence of thoughts as detachment from them. It is the opening of mind and heart, body and emotions, our whole being to God, the ultimate mystery, beyond words, thoughts, and emotions, beyond, in other words, the psychological content of the present moment. He went on, in centering prayer, we do not deny or repress what is in our conscious thinking process. We simply accept the fact of whatever's there and go beyond it, not by effort, but by letting go of whatever is there. And that's the simplicity of the centering prayer practice, is that whenever we notice that our mind has got caught up in a thought loop, in some story, and some fantasizing, whatever's going on, we simply make the choice to let go and return using a sacred word or the sacred breath as a way of returning to being present and open in this quiet resting in God's presence. And so just very briefly to talk through the method of centering prayer. But in this method, one begins by getting in touch with your body or becoming aware of your breathing, just as a way of coming back from wherever our minds have got caught up, returning to being present. And then you gently introduce some word, called the sacred word, or as David Frenet described it, you could also use your breath as a sacred symbol for returning to the present. And this, if you're using a word, it can be anything that symbolizes your intention to be present and open to God. It can be something like love or Jesus or being, anything that resonates for you. And then during the prayer time, whenever you find your mind wandering around, you gently let go of the thought and return to the sacred word, reintroducing it very gently. And it's important to never judge yourself or criticize yourself during or after your time of centering prayer. It's precisely about learning to let all of this judgment and performance go and returning to the spacious place of stillness where all is held in the love of God, even our failings and weaknesses, even our complete inability to stay present. And why I find this method so remarkably powerful is that it involves a letting go of thoughts, images, and distractions again and again, and a returning in simplicity and trust, in surrender to the presence of God. And so for me, it enables me to clear the space of the turbulence caused by the incessant voices of my mind, as well as being aware of returning to the present, to the presence of God, and opening myself in simplicity and trust, allowing my awareness to rest again in this quiet inner place of being, in God's being. And so I invite you into a time of practicing this now. If you have some other established form of meditation or quiet prayer, I invite you to practice that. But let's go into a time of practicing this for 20 minutes now. I'll have a timer on this webpage that you can use. And just keep doing this again and again. Whenever you find your mind wandering, you just gently let go of whatever's there and return to your sacred symbol, your word or your breath, as a way of returning 1,000 times, 10,000 times if need be, to the I Am presence of our loving God.